The many meanderings of the first Gen X man. Excellent.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you. Thank you, fake audience. Thank you so much. And thank you, fake church organist. Very nice. Now, please be seated, and we will commence with our services. Hello, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of The Many Meanderings of the First Gen X Man. I'm Will Boudreau, and today I'll be bringing you readings from the book of Meandering. That's right, we're going to be talking about church, going to church, growing up in church, funny things that sometimes happen in church. But since I have no desire to be divisive or offensive, rest assured, fundamentalists on all sides of the faith aisle, I will be discussing church, not... you know, whoever or whatever that is to you. I think one of the hardest things about the lockdown for many people was the idea that they were unable to attend church services. I know that back in the day, the very thought of not going to church every single Sunday would have made my very Catholic parents' heads both explode. In an impressive burst of incense-scented Catholic fire, of course. Yeah, we were what you call capital C Catholics. We went to church every single Sunday. Every single week. We went all summer long to endless services, not cooled at all by the two lame box fans that they put on either side of the altar.
Peace be with you. And also with you. It's hot in here, isn't it? Yes, it is very warm.
We went to church on vacation. My dad found out where the Catholic Church was wherever we happened to be. Lake Winnipesaukee, a different part of Lake Winnipesaukee, a lake that was right next to Lake Winnipesaukee. We didn't really go anywhere else on vacation, but we loved it. We also went to church on days other than Sunday, the so-called Holy Days of Obligation. You know, like the Feasts of the Ascension and the Assumption.
Hey, what are we celebrating today? Ascending or assuming?
I'm assuming it's ascending.
And of course, All Saints Day, the participation trophy of Catholic feast days.
Hey, what about me, Saint Polycarp, patron saint of dysentery and earaches? Don't I get a holiday?
Oh, and what about me, Saint Barbara, patron saint of fireworks? Maybe give me July 4th.
And what about me, Saint Drogo, the patron saint of unattractive people? Where's my day?
Of course you do. You all do. We celebrate all of you very much on All Saints Day. Just stand in the back, Saint Drogo. Just all the way in the back. Get a little further. Yes, much better. Very good.
Church was a huge part of my life when I was a kid because I attended St. Bridget's School, which was right across the street from St. Bridget's Church. I had nuns at first who wore habits, but then things got all hippie and groovy, and the nuns started wearing bell-bottoms and wide-wailed corduroy pantsuits. And I was an altar boy, or altar server, as they say now, so I spent even more time in church than the rest of my family. Part of my altar boy duties were to assist the priest when he had a weekday funeral in the church across the street from our school. I'd be sitting in class developing that headache I always got when I was trying to do math, when suddenly Father Flatley would pop his head in and say to the nun who was teaching us,
Hello there, sister. I need an altar boy to help with a funeral in a few minutes. Who'd like to come?
Immediately, every altar boy's hand in the classroom would shoot up.
Pick me, please, I want to go to the funeral. No, I want to go to the funeral.
It was kind of dark and strange, but to us, at 10 years old, going with the priest to serve the funeral was far more desirable than sitting in class. It was the altar boy equivalent of a snow day, except even more random. You never knew when it was coming. One minute you're doing long division, the next minute,
yay, I'm going to a funeral.
I seriously went to a couple of dozen funerals before I was around 12 years old. When you go to that many funerals, and you're young, you start to get a little bit desensitized. I began to notice that most funerals were pretty much the same. Somebody old to me had died, and there weren't usually that many people attending. The church organist and singer would play all the same songs, which were somber. Unlike the upbeat Christian rock songs from the musical Godspell that we used to sing in school.
Day by day, day by day, day by day, day by day.
By the way, speaking of funerals, I was once at a wake in Queens, sitting in one of the folding chairs in the viewing room, you know, with the open casket a few feet in front of me. I was just sitting there thinking somber thoughts when I heard two old men behind me strike up a conversation. I never saw these guys. I just heard them, and I swear this was their exact conversation.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. Can't complain, you know.
Hey, how's your son doing?
Oh, my son? He's good, he's good. You know, he's out in California now.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, what's he doing out there?
He's a Ferengi on Deep Space Nine.
Is he making a living?
Yeah, he's doing all right.
I just love that man's response to, he's a Ferengi on Deep Space Nine, wasn't, what's a Ferengi? Or, what's Deep Space Nine? Or, what are you talking about? No, it was the eminently practical, entirely judgment-free question.
Is he making a living? And of course, as we all know, the Ferengis are an alien race in the Star Trek universe, famous for being extremely capitalistic. They literally worship profit. Which makes the question, is he making a living, even funnier. You know, if, like me, you're
a nerd. The big moment for any altar boy during the Sunday service was, of course, the ringing of the bells. This took place during the sacrament of the Eucharist, when the priest is talking about the events of the Last Supper. And when he says certain things, he pauses and waits for the altar boy to ring some handbells that are up there on the altar. It's the holiest, most serious moment of the service. And for the altar boy, it's roughly the equivalent of a guitar solo. I mean, you're up on stage. There's a church full of people looking at you. It's suddenly dead quiet, and you're 10 years old, and you get to ring those bells as loud as you want. It's a big moment. So one day, I was up there on the altar, getting a little tall for my black cassock and white surplice altar boy uniform, my jeans sticking out a little too far at the bottom, and because I was getting a little older, probably around 8th grade, I had become aware of the girls from my school who were watching me up there. And this particular day, I became more aware of one particular girl who I had developed a little crush on. And as I sat there, kneeling in my too short cassock, I glanced out into the congregation and saw her right there in the second row. Her face was bathed in heavenly shafts of multicolored light, streaming in from the stained glass windows. And when I saw her, she saw me. And not only did she see me, but she also smiled at me. And there I was, transfixed for a moment by this unexpected romantic smile reciprocity. I was so caught up in the moment I failed to hear my cue. Father Hanley gave me the line.
Take this, all of you, and eat it. This is my body, which will be given up for you.
Wow, she's looking at me, and I'm looking at her, and she's looking back at me, and I'm looking back at her, and now she's looking back at me again, and now she's smiling, and I'm smiling, and...
Father Hanley tried again.
Take this, all of you, and eat it. This is my body, which will be given up for you, Wilfred.
That did it. That definitely broke the spell. I wasn't used to hearing my name at the end of the Eucharistic prayer. It shocked me, and I realized it was past time for my bell solo. I grabbed wildly at the bells. But I was so nervous, I banged the bells against the side of the wooden kneeler I was kneeling on. And then, when I banged them, they got loose in my suddenly sweaty hand, and then they went sailing through the air, landing on the marble steps that led up to the altar. And then they rolled, noisily, down all four marble steps. I said the bell ringing was typically a big moment for the altar boy, but this was not what I had in mind. I had to get up and walk down the four steps and retrieve the bells, which had landed right in the middle of the aisle. Then I had to walk back up the steps and resume my kneeling position while everybody watched me in the quiet church. All of this took what felt like several hours in my tortured preteen mind. Father Hanley did not trust me with bell duty for many Sundays after this incident. And the girl and I, alas, never smiled at one another again. Of course, the biggest church event of the year when I was a kid was the Christmas Mass. My parents would make us take a nap on Christmas Eve around 8 p.m. or so. Then they'd wake us up around 11 p.m. and we'd all head out to midnight mass. I remember our pastor always started his sermon the same way every year. He'd step up to the pulpit, and after a long pause, he would say,
"Silent night, holy night. All is calm, all is bright."
He'd always pause for a long time and let that sink in.
You know what? It is calm. You know what else? It's also bright. All of it. All of it's calm and bright.
I used to wonder if one year he'd change it up and hit us with another Christmas Carol quote.
"Grandma got run over by a reindeer coming home from our house Christmas Eve." Let's reflect on that for a moment.
It was so cool going to midnight mass when I was a kid because when you're a kid, doing anything at midnight is unheard of. But on that one night in the year, we ventured out of our house at the impossibly late hour of 11 p.m. And then we'd get to the church and it would be filled with people who were also out at that ridiculous hour. We'd see our friends and neighbors, and just the fact that we were all together and at church at midnight, it felt oddly illicit. I remember midnight mass always had a big show, a huge step up from the regular Sunday service. They usually had a trumpet player and maybe some other brass players up there in the choir loft. And when that big trumpet let loose on the riff from one of the more anthemic Christmas songs like "Angels We Have Heard on High," I half expected to see the angel Gabriel himself flying around in the rafters, blowing on his celestial horn. That music and that candlelight and that aroma of the frankincense and myrrh, or whatever kind of incense they were using, the sheer pageantry of it all combined to give me such a festive buzz. It was like we all got put into this Christmas spirit particle accelerator. When it was over, we'd all walk out into the frozen Massachusetts December air, possessed by Yule tidings so intense that our collective auras were all ablaze in red and green shimmering lights. I always loved how everyone wished each other a Merry Christmas as we walked out of Midnight Mass, and my sisters and I would make great clouds of frosty air as we belted out our imitation of the Gilbert and Sullivan aficionado in our church choir, who always rolled his R's.
Today is born the Savior, Christ the Lord.
Gloria in excelsis Deo.
St. Bridget's Church was a huge part of our lives in many ways. And for my parents, it was basically their social life. Put it this way, when my parents went to the time and expense of hiring a babysitter, and then they went out for the evening, it was always to attend a holiday event at St. Bridget's in what was called the school hall, but what was really just the St. Bridget's school cafeteria. It was a long, low-ceilinged room with a wooden stage at one end. That was where I was a shepherd in many a school Christmas pageant. Never got cast as one of the three kings. Not once. Not ever. Still hurts. Oh, how I have often wished I could have been a fly on the wall during those lavish St. Bridget's Church holiday parties, as my parents and their friends danced the night away on the shining linoleum of the school cafeteria floor. And as they drank more than a few whiskey sours and highballs. I don't want to say they drank too much, but I do vividly remember waking up one Sunday morning to see that my dad had parked our station wagon right in the middle of the front lawn. Did we still go to church that Sunday morning? You bet your Alka-Seltzer we did. Recently, thanks to the excellent work of my historical audio research department, I came into possession of a very rare audio recording from one of those St. Bridget's Church holiday functions. It's a tape recording of our beloved Father Flatley performing the very important Blessing of the Corned Beef and Cabbage at St. Bridget's St. Patrick's Day dinner dance in 1975. Imagine a school cafeteria covered in green cray paper streamers, tables covered in green tablecloths with green carnation centerpieces and festive cardboard leprechauns scotch taped to white cinder block walls. An Irish band up on the stage is playing all the Irish hits. Let's listen.
Hello. Is this on? Can you hear me? Hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our annual St. Patrick's Day dinner dance. Hope everyone has been enjoying our band, the Shannonaires, from Shannon, I assume, Shannon, Ireland. They are, well, Leominster, but Shannon before, not Leominster. Anyway, that was a lively number you just played. I'm not sure I've ever heard, Hot Stuff by Donna Summer as an Irish Jake, but that was very entertaining. And how about this corned beef and cabbage tonight, huh? Doesn't it look great? Great job, Mrs. Sullivan and Mrs. Casey, back there in the kitchen. Ladies, can you hear me? Great job. In my opinion, this corned beef and cabbage is so good, it's good enough to be served to St. Patrick himself, floating up there on his emerald-colored cloud in heaven. Come on down, St. Patrick. We'll We'll make you up a plate. And we'll buy you a drink. By the way, Father Riley over at the bar has informed me that despite the fact that it's only, what is it, about 7 o'clock, we have already run out of Jameson's. What's that? Oh, yeah. And also old Bushmills. We're out of Jameson's and old Bushmills. So no more Irish whiskey tonight. However, we still do have plenty of Cutty Sock, Scotch, and Jim Beam Bourbon, which, of course, are the Irish whiskeys of Scotland and America, respectively. Oh, and another note, many of the wives this evening have requested that I announce that the former Mrs., now Ms., Finelli's Kiss Me I'm Irish button that she's wearing on her beautiful leprechaun sweater, that kiss is purely optional, not at all mandatory, especially since, you know, she's not actually Irish. So, fellas, you won't be considered rude if you don't kiss Teresa Finelli. How you doing there, Teresa? Here's to you. Glad to see you having a good time tonight, despite the tragedy of your recent divorce. All right, on to the blessing of the corned beef and cabbage. Oh, Lord, please bless this very lean corned beef and this delicious boiled cabbage. And bless the potatoes, which are also boiled, the carrots boiled as well. Bless all of these pots filled with boiled food from a beloved Emerald Isle. Also bless this very large shamrock sheet cake from Paul's Bakery and the shamrock cookies made by our own Betty Gallagher. What? Oh, they're leprechaun cookies. Oh, I thought they were, oh yeah. Oh, I see it now, that's his little hat. Okay, and bless the leprechaun cookies. We feel your spirit here with us tonight, St. Patrick. Thank you for bringing your good cheer to us here in the school hall. Please guide our cars home safely with your steady hand and keep us safe from any speed traps set by the Maine Police Department. I'm getting a look now. Just kidding, Police Chief Garrity. Just kidding. Amen and Erin Gobra. Oh, one other thing. Still plenty of tickets left for the raffle. Grand prize donated by Victory Markets. Some lucky winner is going to go home with a 5-pound salami. That is a beautiful salami. Okay, now it looks like we're out of bourbon. I think we better shut the bar down for a half an hour or so. Now let's bring the Shannonaires back. Hit it, lads.
For the past year, most of us have not been going to church at all. It's one of the many changes in routine that has left a big hole in many of our lives. And whether you're particularly religious or not, I'm not, for instance, but I recognize that there is something comforting about that weekly tradition. And maybe because it's what I grew up doing, putting on church clothes and heading out to a service on Sunday morning, it just seems right. Although, if you're my kids, church clothes really becomes a relative term.
Okay, when I said a shirt, I didn't mean a SpongeBob shirt. And when I said pants, I meant not pajama pants. And when I said shoes, I meant put some shoes on. All right, never mind. Just wear flip-flops. We're late.
We've migrated from Catholicism to Presbyterianism. Sorry, Mom and Dad. Don't worry. I'll be fine. My parents were as serious about religion as they were about Boston sports teams. Our teams were the Boston Red Sox and the Celtics and the Bruins and the Boston Catholics. They looked on any other teams with great suspicion and not a small amount of interleague or interfaith rivalry.
Well, I hear they only do communion once a month, and they also do say three words differently in their Lord's Prayer. But it's your life, Wilfred.
Anyway, my favorite part of the Presbyterian Church service is the time each week when everyone is invited to share their joys or their concerns. They literally pass a microphone around the congregation and people offer up what they're happy or sad about. It's a beautiful moment. It's always uplifting to hear about the engagements and the new babies and sometimes the remissions that people are happy about. On the other side, I'm always shocked at the amount of heartache that people are quietly enduring. You'd never know it just by looking at them. Then they open their mouths and suddenly you get a glimpse of the load they're carrying. There's something about that collective and public sharing that somehow eases their burden. I've often wondered, during this lockdown, how many diagnoses and deaths and despairs of all kinds were carried alone, without the comfort of others to at least talk to. I think we're all looking forward to doing all kinds of normal things again. Going to the movies, going to work, even going to church. Places that put us in the company of other people. One thing we've all been suffering from this past year is a severe lack of human contact. We're all ready to break free from this sci-fi screen-based reality, to step out into the real world and talk and laugh and sing and be human beings together. So whether your church is the office or Fenway Park or a bowling alley or an actual church, I really hope you start attending again soon. If there's one thing we've learned this past year, being around other beating hearts is good for the soul. That's all for this week's episode of The Many Meanderings of the First Gen X Man. I'd like to thank you all very, very much for listening. Please tell your friends. If you like what you heard today, please consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Not hard to do. And if you really, really liked it, write us a review and I'll give you a shout out on our next episode. Speaking of shout outs, I got a brief but welcome review from someone who calls themselves Not Happy in the Hampshire. The headline is Tears and Laughter. Thank you so much, Not Happy in the Hampshire. I'm glad I could make you laugh and cry. I often find myself tearing up when I listen back to these meanderings. My stories are true, mostly, and they are all from the heart. As always, enormous thanks to Watt White for our show's theme music. Many Meanderings of the First Gen X Man is written and produced by me. I'm Will Boudreau, and I'll see you when we meander again.
The many meanderings of the first Gen X man.
Excellent.